Moneyline with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Happy Selection Sunday to everybody. We'll be discussing some college hoops in about 30 minutes with our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel, who is host of VSiN Primetime. Also, we'll be hosting the Betting the Bracket show here on VSiN from 7 to 10 Eastern Time. Instant analysis right after the bracket is released. We'll be talking with JVT in 30 minutes. And then Wes Reynolds, host of VSiN Tonight, will join us 45 minutes from now to discuss some more college hoops, as well as Wes is dialed into the Big Ten. Who does he like between Wisconsin and Illinois? We'll ask Wes that in about 45 minutes. He'll be joining us in studio. But Michael, let's kick off our number two with what we have dubbed scrubbing season. Bills wide receiver Stephon Diggs. It feels like every now and then we have a discussion about Stephon Diggs, as this guy, Stephon Diggs was on social media earlier this week and had some ominous tweets. March 15th, he tweeted, "Ready for whatever." And I think a lot of Bills fans and a lot of fans around the NFL interpreted that as, hey, could Diggs get traded? The contract is massive. The production wasn't as massive this past season. Looked like he had lost a little bit of a step there. And he updated his Twitter bio, the header photo, with him waving. So almost as to say, like, he's waving goodbye, and people have now interpreted that. What's the latest that you're hearing on this Stephon Diggs thing that is obviously layered with the production, but also the contract being big heading into the final 3 years of that deal?
Well, I mean, look, he's available. And I think who's going to step up to take the contract, right? And then you're always concerned about a receiver who's dipped down 2 yards per catch from the year ago, 13.2 the year before, down to 11.8. And you could say, well, the quarterback, no, Josh Allen's really good. I think what you're seeing is a decline, right? You know, when we go back to his great year in 20, where he averaged, you know, he had 1,500 yards on 127 catches, he averaged 12.1 a catch, but he made plays down the field. I mean, last year he wasn't making first downs. He only made 58 first downs on those catches, on 107 catches. So he wasn't explosive. He wasn't stretching the defense. They were not. They're paying for a number one receiver. Now, I know this is hard for people to accept, but Diggs is not a top five receiver based on what he did last season. He doesn't scare the defensive coordinators or challenge the coverage to go in his direction. Is he still an effective player? Yes. But this is one of those situations where salary doesn't match performance. And so the Bills are listening, and I think it's going to be problematic for them to move him because of that contract. Will they cut him? I mean, that's the hard part, right? Do you bring him back when you know he's unhappy? I mean, look, nothing says I'm sorry better than money, but you've already paid him.
Yeah.
You've already paid him, and he comes with a huge cap hit if you do trade him. They would have to move it into the next year and do the June 1st thing with him. So I think this is something worth monitoring. Look, I think with the – we saw this happen recently. We saw that Keenan Allen had no interest in taking a pay cut, simply saying, why would I take a pay cut? I just had one of my best seasons. Fair enough, right?
Yeah.
Well, there were other teams involved in Keenan Allen. The Jets were interested. They were sniffing. And the Houston Texans, who sniff on every player, were sniffing. Does that mean they might sniff on Stephon Diggs? I don't know. It's a bigger price tag.
Yeah, right now, if they were to make Stephon Diggs a post-June 1 cut, they would save $19 million on this cap. It would be a dead cap hit of 8.8 this year and then 22.2 in 2025. So they could have some savings now, but they're still going to have to eventually pay this thing off here because it's a monster contract that Stephon Diggs had there. And one thing that always come to mind here when I think about some of these wide receivers that are a little bit declining, because it feels like nobody's saying that he can't play, but he's at least – after what we saw last year, it looks like he would be a player who's descending, not ascending. And I think back to the Doug Collins quote when he talked about NBA stars, and he always said that you never want to coach a declining superstar because they think that they can still do it. They think that they're still that guy, even though their play says they might not be that guy. Could Diggs, not saying that he's a problem child, but could that be a little bit tricky of a situation to manage if you were to trade for Stephon Diggs, knowing that he's not really the wide receiver one that we saw a couple years ago or 3 years ago playing at an all-pro level?
No question. I mean, it's why Phil Jackson left the Lakers. He didn't want to coach Kobe towards the end because he knew Kobe's mindset was, I'm still a great player. I'm still can Kobe. Do everything I can do when... I'm still Kobe. So it's really a challenge, right? And you got to have the player who has to accept where he is. And look, let's face it. I know 31 is not old, but Diggs will turn 31. And that's kind of the breakoff point on a lot of these receivers. And one of the things, if you take basketball and bring it to football, what you see in basketball, when guys lose their legs, their hands aren't as effective. And that's where I think Diggs has really kind of declined a little bit. His hands, which were really good at one time, I don't think have been as good over the last years. So I think you got to be really take that into consideration, how he is playing, what's he doing, you know, how many drops he's had. You know, he had 8 drops last year, had 8 drops the year before. You know, he's when you drop the ball or you can't catch the ball. I mean, look, if he makes the one play against Kansas City, they're probably in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, which is crazy to say a lot. I mean, and you look at his stats from this past season, 107 catches, 1,100 yards, 8 touchdowns. Those are really good numbers, obviously. But compared to years past, where in 2022, he was 108 for 1,400 yards and 11 TDs, having 13.2 yards per catch versus now the 11.1 that he did in 2023. You start to see the decline there a little bit. But over at DraftKings, you can bet on this stuff. Next team for Stephon Diggs, where will he take his first snap in 2024? The Bills are still the odds-on favorite, minus 230 right now. The Cowboys, for some reason, are the second choice at 4-1. I'm not sure how you put the Cowboys up there based on what they've done so far throughout this free agency period. Houston, who you mentioned, plus 550. Patriots and Ravens are at 12-1. Panthers, Cardinals, 18-1. Chargers, Chiefs, Giants, 20-1. Where do you think Stephon Diggs could be a good fit if the Bills were to trade him?
Well, that's a great question. Obviously, Houston's sniffing around to get a guy like this, right? So I would say Houston, right? If they had, when you look at their team, you know, they re-signed Noah Brown. You know, Nico Collins was a really good player for them. The third rounder that they drafted last year from Houston was incredible for them, and he got hurt, went on IR. So they've got some really good skill players on the team. I just think Tank Dell is who I'm talking about. Yep. So I think ultimately that situation where he could come in, where he could not have to carry the team, right? You know, when you come from Buffalo to another team, like you're not the number one receiver. You are one of the group of receivers. Same thing in Dallas, right? You'd CeeDee Lamb. But again, it comes back to the contract. It comes back to what are we paying? How much does it cost? And how accepting is he to kind of play within the role? And I think that's always been a little bit of a challenge.
If Buffalo were to trade him, is this sort of a situation for the Bills where they're taking a step back to maybe then take 2 steps forward? Like, what would the Bills' outlook be in 2024, where they already lost Gabe Davis to the Jaguars in free agency? If they lost Stephon Diggs, I mean, those are your 2 top pass catchers. Is it just now like we're just running 2 tight ends with Knox and Kincaid? Like, how do they kind of configure their offense if they went without Diggs?
No, I think they would. They've decided they're going to be a 12 team. You know, really a big 12, a loose 12 team is. You know, because Kincaid's a slot receiver essentially, right?
Yep.
And they got Knox to be on the line. You know, they would probably go out and try to see if they could find somebody that would be available in the marketplace. Try to add somebody in the draft. I think that, you know, their feeling is, look, we would get the flexibility. I don't get the sense that they're just going to dump them, but I get the sense that they're tired of dealing with them, right? I get the sense they're tired of dealing with them.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting situation for this offseason. Stephon Diggs now, like we said, every so often we discuss his whereabouts and where he might go. We were having this conversation last year at the start of training camp, and they patched things up. They were able to play the 2023 season. Maybe they're unable to do that here in 2024. Aaron Donald earlier this week, I think this was big news, honestly, in the NFL. And obviously, congratulations on a hell of a career. 10 years, I mean, multiple all-pros, like, 6-7 all-pros, made the Pro Bowl every single season. He's going right into the Hall of Fame, one of the best defenders in the history of the league. He retires. So kudos to Aaron Donald on the career. Did everything that you could do for an NFL player. But for the Rams, this leaves a pretty big hole, because this guy at his peak was maybe the best player in the NFL, still really good in 2023. How does this affect the Rams heading forward, a team that we kind of like, but it's hard to not look at this and say, wow, that's a big loss for LA.
Well, when you go through the gain losses, right, and you see what the Rams have been able to do, they've added to their team and they've improved their offensive line. But now you take out a guy who tilts the field. You can't replace him, right? You can't replace that player. And I obviously think the Rams knew that this was coming about. They redid his contract. They removed the money around so that they could, you know, they lowered his cap number. to as low as they could. And I think they took really good care of the player. But, you know, you're never going to be able to do this on a, you know, you're not replacing this guy. Again, it's hard to find three techniques in the league. So I think this really makes their defense a little shaky right now. And they're going to just have a great draft and see if they can. Because let's be clear, there's nobody out there on the market that's going to be able to replace him. He's too good of a player. So you honor the career and you move forward. And, you know, look, they're going to just have to constantly do this. I think they've done a nice job in free agency and who they've picked up. But I just don't see how you can really replace them. No, nobody can replace them. And when you have greatness like this and this sets your defense where you know they have to double team them and all the other players are playing off of it, I think it makes it really hard for Chris Shula as he takes over as a defense coordinator from Raheem Morris. To fill this void. And look, the Rams have only lost two players. They've lost Jordan Fuller and they've lost Aaron Donald. But Aaron Donald counts like seven losses. I think he's the one of the few players when we talked about what Billy Walters wrote about in his book, that the non-quarterbacks that tilt the field, this is one of those guys.
Yeah, he was a three-time defensive player of the year, member of the 2010s all-decade team in the NFL, 8 first-team all-pros, most ever for a defensive tackle, 10-time Pro Bowler. He was defensive rookie of the year back in 2014. As blue chip gets, and he's going to walk right to Canton 5 years from now when he's eligible for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So big, big loss for the Los Angeles Rams. We'll see how that factors into what they do the rest of this offseason and what ultimately happens later on this fall. We'll talk about some other moves that might impact the betting markets on the other side here. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get an early start on your college hoops tournament betting with VSiN's full court bracket betting coverage starting today. We'll have a full show dedicated to opening lines for every game. The VSiN college hoops experts Jonathan Von Tobel and Tim Murray will analyze every game and discuss with the bookmakers making the lines to find the best early value. Don't wait for the lines to move. Start your bracket and tournament betting with VSiN's Betting the Bracket show today starting at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And Jonathan Von Tobel will be joining us 15 minutes from now to give out his final thoughts here on these conference tournaments that are wrapping up later on today. And of course, what we could expect to see later on with the bracket release, 6 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock West Coast time. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. And Michael, let's get to the gridiron here with some of the moves that could move the needle here throughout free agency, because that's what free agency is all about for us bettors here, is trying to cipher through all the noise, because we all know the names, but do they actually have the game? Do they impact what we'll see in the betting markets later on this fall? And we'll start off with the New York Jets Friday night for out on the East Coast, signing former Cowboys left tackle Tyron Smith to a 1-year deal, $6.5 million guaranteed, worth up to $20 million. It's up to season right now with the deals that we're seeing out there in free agency.
I mean, it's a fake. Those are fake numbers, right? I mean, the number is he makes $6.5 million in paragraph 5, and they put incentives in there for play time. Now, he played in 13 games last year. He's only played in 30 games over the last 4 years. He's got back issues. The one thing you never want to do in your career is take an offensive lineman that has back trouble. So here's the question Jet fans need to ask themselves. If Smith can be our starting left tackle and he's only $6.5 million, why didn't the Cowboys sign him? Why wouldn't the Cowboys have signed him back? That's a really cheap deal. You know, everybody's focused on the 20. The 20's insignificant. It's the 6.5 they guaranteed as paragraph 5. No big deal. So 6.5 for a starting left tackle is not a lot of money. And so you have to wonder, what does Dallas know that we don't know? And Dallas knows that he has back issues. Dallas knows that he's got durability issues. Dallas knows that as good of a player as he once was, he's not reliable to play good all the time. Even though he may have played 13 games, he wasn't the Tyron Smith that we know. So for all the people that say now the Jets have Smith, they're not going to draft a tackle, I think you're wrong there. because I don't think you have a tackle, right? You got two tackles, Morgan Moses and Tyron Smith, and you're hoping they stay healthy. Moses is on the ground more than any offensive lineman in the league. And so you've got to really hope you can stay healthy there. I think if you're Joe Douglas, you got to reinforce that line. I don't think you can look somewhere else because that line is going to be the key to your season.
Yeah, you need to maybe get that left tackle of the future because Tyron Smith is like the left tackle of – I mean, they're hoping right now, but maybe it's the left tackle of yesterday based on the injuries.
The left tackle of maybe today, right? I mean, you have to, Femi, you're a Cowboy fan. You have to go back to 2015 when he played in all the games.
Oh,
think about that.
100%.
And you know, now he's going to be 34 years old. The last thing you want to do is sign an older tackle at 34, right? I mean, I think that's the problem. And, you know, when you look at the Jets, because they've not, I mean, the Jets have been one of the worst teams in free agency. When you look at all the mistakes that they've made, so now they've got a 34-year-old left tackle and they're going to have a 33-year-old right tackle. Good luck with that. At least Moses, I give him credit for this. I don't think he's an elite player, but he plays. I mean, he only missed three games last year. He played, and he's played pretty much, and he's been durable when he's been out there.
So the Jets, the offensive line was like the big weakness heading into last season that we all, even before Rodgers got hurt, we all pointed to. Offensive line is a problem. Make sure you look out for this when you're evaluating this team. They've tried to address that with the Tyron Smith signing, the Morgan Moses signing. They also went ahead and signed John Simpson from the Ravens. All of those signings combined together, Michael, does that move the needle for you with this Jets team in 2024, obviously with Aaron Rodgers coming back off the Achilles injury?
Well, on paper, it looks really good, right? We got Morgan Moses starts at right tackle. We've got Tyron Smith, the starting left tackle. Simpson started at guard. You know, Tippmann, now we can get him back to his natural position of center, the kid from Minnesota. And then Vera Tucker, who was a good player but hurt for us last year. Again, it comes back to, can they all play? Can they all stay healthy and be on the field? That's the concern. And the bigger concern is Tyron Smith. Can he stay? Because if they lose the left tackle, what do they do at that point? You know, they can't put Moses over there, right? How many times, you know, that has the Cowboys had to move Tyler Smith out during games even to play left tackle? So on paper, it looks good. But you and I both know paper doesn't translate. And when you're getting old in the offensive line, that's an issue. That's a real issue. So, look, I think they got to hold their breath. And when you're holding your breath on players like they did last year, right? They were holding their breath on Dwayne Brown. He got hurt. They were holding their breath on Becton that he was going to improve and come off the injury. Didn't work out.
Yeah, holding your breath is the perfect way to phrase it. When you're watching Tyron Smith play, anytime he's on the ground, you're just like, oh, please get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, is all you're thinking there. And that was like the last 4 or 5 years for me as a Cowboys fan. Like, he was a really good player, but it just the injuries catch up for those guys, and now he's 34 years old. Yeah.
You know, then is then, now is now. Yeah. And I think that's something that you have to kind of take into consideration. Like, here's the other thing about Tyron Smith. He can't practice.
Yep.
Like, you can't, you can't put him out there and practice every day. He's going to be on the injury report. You're going to nurse, you're going to deal with this. There's a lot of maintenance involved. There's a lot of maintenance involved in this. And the reliability is so important. Now, that's why I don't think they're just going to say, oh, we're not going to draft it all. We're going to draft another receiver, which, you know, if you give it to the Twitter, there'll be 32 receivers picked in the first round.
You haven't seen that there's about 8 wide receiver ones. I saw that tweet floating around about a few weeks ago in this draft.
It's unbelievable.
8 wide receiver ones.
I can't wait to, you know, the one guy that put out there that there's 15 quarterbacks that Justin Fields is better than. You know, and he listed them on Twitter. You know, here they are. Good luck. I forgot who he was. I should go back and look at now what he reacted to that. I'm sure he probably
just retweet it. Just retweet it. Don't even quote tweet. Just retweet it.
No, I to me, it's so stupid. I wouldn't even give it credibility.
Let's keep it moving here with the Jacksonville Jaguars signing Arik Armstead, the 49ers defensive tackle, 3-year deal worth up to $51 million. Does this move the needle for you with the Jacksonville Jaguars defense?
I think he you know, look, he was drafted by Trent Baalke, who's now in Jacksonville when he was at the 49ers. I think Armstead's a good player. I think Armstead's injury history and his durability is a concern. My question back, which would have moved the needle more for me, would have been, as I would have rather signed Christian Wilkins than Gabe Davis and Arik Armstead. I would have taken those two salaries and combined it into one and said, here you go, Wilkins. I need a blue chip deep defensive tackle. That's where I would have gone. Do I think it moves the needle a little bit? It gives them somebody inside to go along with Josh Brown. I think that certainly helps them if he can stay healthy and on the field, which has been hard for him, right? It's been hard for him. We saw him in the Super Bowl. He was not the same player. He's a disruptive player, but he's 31 years old, and he's on that injury train. So, you know, I like the attention to the position. I think, to me, what I don't like about Jacksonville is they've signed a lot of guys. I don't think they've moved the needle on who they've signed, and I would have rather had, you know, one great player than five of the guys that they signed. You know, I would have rather taken, you know, combined Duvernay and Gabe Davis and Darby and Armstead and said, okay, here's Wilkins. You put Wilkins on this front, now I'm better. And I'll draft the other guys.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. It seems like there's a lot of shuffling of papers in Jacksonville right now. How about Hollywood Brown? The Chiefs went ahead and signed him one-year deal, $11 million from the Arizona Cardinals. Does Marquise Brown move the needle for Kansas City?
Not one inch. And look, you know, let's be clear. I mean, he's not going to move the needle. And one year, we know it's not $11 million, right? I mean, that's you know that's not going to happen.
Up to
so,
season.
So, like, I think to me, yeah, I mean, look, do I think he goes in a better situation? Sure, right? I think it's a better situation for him, but I don't see how this moves the needle for them. They're still, look, I think Kansas City has made it very clear how they've changed direction of their team. And this is another example of them just trying to maneuver the cap. Good move for them to get Brown. I don't think they paid $11 million on a one-year deal. I think it has the potential to get there based on a lot of incentives. But the reality of it is that they're putting their focus and attention in the draft on the defense. They've strengthened the defense. I think there was a period, you know, when the Patriots were, after they won their last Super Bowl, you know, and then the next year they lose in Denver. From that point until 14, the Patriots' offense was dynamic. I mean, Randy Moss in 07, they lose two Super Bowls. But their defense could never control the game, right? They were never getting control of the game, and they tried to win by outscoring people. And finally, in 14, we started to improve the defense. And then I think you saw the three wins over the next few years had as much to do with the defense. Of course, their offense was great coming back. But the defense was able to win. It let them down against Philadelphia. But I think this is what Kansas City's doing is we got to play better defense. Like, we're not going to keep outscoring people like we tried to against New England in the playoff game that we lost at home. So I think all these signings by Kansas City are beneficial in terms of signing these cheap receivers without having to put a lot of resources in, even though people think that they put money in it.
Yeah. Our producer Elliot told me that it's a seven-year million-dollar deal worth up to $11 million, so $4 million in incentives. All right, on the other side, we got our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel joining us here to discuss the bracket college hoops discussion here on The Lombardi Line.
This is The Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before the tournament tips off, start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today. Get your first year for only $199 instead of the typical price of $240. Just use promo code Lombardi. And when you get that VSiN Pro access, you're going to get the daily best bets, the betting systems, the premium analysis, 24/7 video access, but most importantly, our March Mania betting guide with best bets for every game and round of the tournament. Remember, use promo code Lombardi. Get your first year of VSiN Pro access for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Femi Abebefe. We're hanging out here on this Selection Sunday. And joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, the one and only Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN Senior NBA Analyst, also host of the VSiN Primetime, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern. And we'll be hosting tonight with our buddy Tim Murray, Betting the Bracket, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Instant analysis post-bracket release that you'll want to check out to go ahead and get some betting advice heading into the round of 64, which starts on Thursday. JVT, hope all is well. Good morning. Happy Selection Sunday. Iowa State, a team that you're very high on, knocked off Houston yesterday afternoon in the Big 12 title game. Is this a team that you think can be Final Four good from the Cyclones? Because the offense has been a little bit questionable, but they came up this weekend in Kansas City.
Yeah, I think they can, man. I really like this team a bunch. I bet them about a month ago or so to win the whole thing, about 25-1. Could get a one seed now, depending on what shakes out. We saw quite a few of these teams go down, and that fourth seed has always been kind of a question, that fourth number one seed. But when you have the backcourt play that they do defensively, like this team can, I think, really bother anybody. The fact that one of the best teams in the country in Houston, it's not even just overall, guys. This is one of the best teams in terms of limiting turnovers. They have a great backcourt, Houston does, and they were all over them. And this team now, remember, this year, 2-1 against Houston in three games. So, like, they're a pretty dang good team at this point. Very well coached T.J. Altsberger. You've got good big-bodied guards in the backcourt led by Keyshawn Gilbert, who's sitting at 6'4". I think they have everything you want. And if the path continues to get easier, i.e. getting a top seed in the NCAA tournament, I don't see what there's not to like. You mentioned the offense, Femi. That does have some work to do, but it's looked pretty good here in the Big 12 tournament and still right around top 50, 55th right now by KenPom Metrics in offensive efficiency and first in the country now in defensive efficiency. There is a lot to like about this team, and I think they're going to make a pretty big run here once the bracket settles.
You know, Lenardi has them, JVT, as a number two seed, but he puts them in the UConn bracket. I mean, that to me seems like, wouldn't you rather be the three seed in another bracket than having to face UConn to get to the finals?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I guess the benefit would be, Michael, right? If you're a two seed, you don't have to face them ultimately until, you know, the very near end. But to your overall point, one of the weaknesses here for Iowa State is their rebounding. If you look at them coming into today, 220 or 202nd in the country in defensive rebounding rate. And one of the things that I have stuck to with UConn, they are an awesome rebounding team, guys. They can crush anybody on the offensive glass. They can generate second chance opportunities. It's one of their biggest strengths. They are right now, 15th in the country in offensive rebounding rate, top 100 team in defensive rebounding rate, and destroyed big teams in Big East play, Michael. So I think that's going to be one of the big weaknesses. But the overall benefit would be, of course, is that maybe you don't face them until the end. But either way, if I'm right about this team, you're going to have to get over one of these big teams, and you would assume it's going to be UConn at some point. But I think you are right where, for the most part, if you have championship aspirations, you don't want to be in that bracket. You want to be anywhere but against UConn, considering the way this team looks right now.
Yeah, UConn looks like a juggernaut, a wagon, as the kids say. They're the defending national champions. They look like maybe even better than they were last year. We're hanging out with Jonathan Von Tobel here on the Progressive Guest Line, host of VSiN Primetime. We'll be hosting the Betting the Bracket show with Tim Murray coming up later on this evening, 7 p.m. Eastern time here, right after the bracket is released. JVT, you're also big on the Mountain West. The Mountain West tournament lived up to its billing. Competitive games all throughout each and every round here. And it was won by New Mexico, a team that I know that you're high on here. For folks who have not seen the Lobos play this season, what makes them so dangerous heading into the month of March now that we're in the tournament time this upcoming week?
You know, when you get into the NCAA tournament, Femi, you want good guard play. And New Mexico has that in droves. Jalen House, their lead guard, absolutely fantastic. Now, all these guards are a little bit smaller, but they're very fast, but they're so awesome. Jalen House is incredible. You have Jamal Mashburn, a fellow senior, who is absolutely brilliant, too. So you have two guys who are seniors, play very well. Jamal Baker comes off the bench, a very well-traveled guard in college basketball. So you got three guys at the top. All seniors are going to be very good. Sophomore Donovan Dent, absolutely incredible. He can shoot the ball particularly well, too. If given the opportunity, hasn't taken a high volume of shots, but still can't hit threes. And then when you look at overall their balance, guys, JD Toppin won Mountain West Freshman of the Year. He's got some size to them. Nelly Jr. Joseph, another senior who stands at 6'10", can rebound among some of the best rebounders in the country. Like, there's just some really good balance here with this team. So when you start with a trio of senior guards that can play pretty well, one of them coming off of the bench, some decent size in the front court, some versatility, I think this team's got everything to get hot in a neutral court setting. We just saw it, right, Femi? You mentioned it. Absolutely smoked Air Force, got a very big win over Boise State, absolutely obliterated Colorado State, and was up on San Diego State, let go of the rope a little bit, came right back and ended up winning by 7. This team, I think, has all the makings of a team that you want to be able to make a run here, and this win in this Mountain West tournament pushed them to a higher seed. So I can't wait to see this team. I, you know, not the best number, we bet them about a month ago, and then that's when they started to swoon a little bit, but this team, I think, has all the makings of a team that you want in a neutral court setting like an NCAA tournament.
JVT, how have you kind of handled your power rankings based on the way these teams approach the conference tournament, where I don't think there's the same sense of urgency to win by the one seeds as I think many hoped when they set up this tournament play, right? It seems like we're a one seed, we're going to just take this time. There's no sense of urgency, you know, that we saw Tennessee not play, Kentucky the same thing. How have you adjusted your power rankings to that?
I don't think so. Like, for the individual tournaments, Michael, I haven't adjusted the power ratings. I think you just take it as part of the situation. And I don't even think it's just the one seeds, right? We'll take Marquette as a really good example. You know, Marquette is solidly seeded, right? We know where they're going to generally be. There's no really improving. There's no fluidity to where Marquette's going to be. And so you go, all right, well, Tyler Colick's hurt. Like, we don't have to push this. Let's just get through this tournament. If we win, we win. If we don't, we don't. And I think you have to take that as part of the handicap overall. So to your point, you know, are we freaking out about some of these one seeds going down? In terms of the actual result, no. I think you want to look for some of the details in the results. So let's talk about Purdue, for example. You know, Purdue, when I watched that yesterday, guys, I watched a team in Wisconsin that was yesterday? I don't even know what day it was.
It was
yeah, it was yesterday. I watched a team in Wisconsin that went after Zach Edey in many different ways, right? They attacked that drop coverage. They got him on a different defender and brought him out to the perimeter away from the middle of the paint. Like, they were going after Edey in so many different ways that, again, when you get to some guard-oriented matchups that Purdue's going to have to face, when you don't have, I believe, a bunch of dominant on-ball defenders, that's going to be, I think, an issue for them. So, Michael, to your point, in terms of adjusting power ratings, I don't think you're doing that much. I think you're trying to look for the devil in the details as to why these things happen. There could be some teams that don't really have a lot to play for because they know they're a one seed. There could also be some teams like Purdue whose tiny little weaknesses in certain matchups could be exploited, and we saw that get exploited. I think those are the things you're kind of worried about.
A friend of the show, Tate Frazier, who Michael knows very well, host of the One Shining podcast, he tweeted, in 2019, Virginia lost in the ACC tournament semifinals, so Purdue's redemption run is right on schedule. Heading lost last year.
I can't get that comp. It's driving me nuts. I think we forget how good and well-balanced that Virginia team was that year, guys. They were one of the best offenses and one of the best defenses in the country. In fact, I think they were number one that year. Like, they were incredible. They had two NBA players on there. Like, we need to relax about, like, this whole thing, because the comp, just because they lost as a one seed last year, I get that's there. But if you actually look at the teams, there's no real comparison between the two.
Just thought I'd bring that up there. It's an interesting comp that we've seen a lot.
I love when JVT gets going like that. I love it. He goes, you know, with some of these, you know, it's like you were on that on football too, JVT, about all the, you know, Pittsburgh's not going to touch their quarterback room. And then you remind everybody not to believe anything the next 40 days. I mean, we are in lying season. You understand this, right?
Dude, it's Michael. It's one of the things that drives me nuts. And so, like, every single report now for the draft, we're taking it as gospel. Like you said, 2 weeks ago, you know, Arthur Smith and Kenny Pickett were at an Applebee's. Everything was fine. They were fine with the quarterback room. Yeah. Now, not a single one of those guys is left on the roster. It's amazing what we choose to believe. And Michael, the thing that drives me nuts is, as you know, it happens every year. Every year we are led astray by reports. And then, yeah, and yet every year it's like, hey, smart GM, four quarterbacks, first four picks. I don't know, man. Like, I don't understand why we believe anything that comes out.
It's because we're all starved. That's why we're all starved for the NFL. Real quick, I know you do have an NBA play, JVT, of course, our senior NBA analyst here. Suns at the Bucks right now. Milwaukee's a 3.5-point favorite, total 228.5.
Yeah, I took a little risk here. Late three. Giannis is on the injury report as questionable here against Phoenix, but it's the third game of 4 days for the Phoenix Suns. Giannis, about 20 minutes ago, was out on the court warming up and getting ready to go. Chris Middleton's not on the report here for the Milwaukee Bucks. This is a play against a negative situation for Phoenix. The fact that I'm going to try to get ahead of the number again, looks like Giannis might play and you get Chris Middleton back. So late three, I think 3.5 still playable here for the Milwaukee Bucks, but you're looking for these scheduling spots, guys, right? Third and four games, of course, all on the road for the Phoenix Suns, not playing particularly well over the larger sample size. So I think this is a good opportunity to come in and take advantage of that for the Phoenix Suns.
All right. Once again, Jonathan Von Tobel, he'll be on the Betting the Bracket show with Tim Murray, 7 to 10 Eastern time. We can't tell you guys enough. You got to check this out right after the bracket is released. You don't get the betting analysis anywhere else. Here at VSiN, you'll get it. JVT, Tim, 7 to 10, Betting the Bracket. Also, check out VSiN Primetime Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern time as well. JVT, good luck with the bets, man, and have fun later on tonight.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, JVT.
Good stuff there from Jonathan Von Tobel. He's not buying into it. He's not buying into the Purdue Boilermakers. Sorry,
nope.
Elliot.
Good for him.
Elliot's behind the glass. I know, punching air right now. His Boilermakers fell to Wisconsin yesterday. Now they'll be the one seed, and we'll see what happens later on this week. All right, we'll wrap up the show with our buddy Wes Reynolds. What's going on in the Big Ten title game between Wisconsin and Illinois? We'll ask Wes coming up to wrap up the show next year on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Listen up, earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait, download the app now, use code TLL when you sign up and earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager now. This is specifically for you VSiN viewers and listeners, and no better time than the March Mania to go ahead and take advantage of this offer. This is the Lombardi Line hanging out with you guys here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey, and joining us now in studio, and he is dressed for the occasion. Happy St. Paddy's Day. Happy Selection Sunday. The one and only Wes Reynolds, host of VSiN Tonight, which you can check out 8 to 11 West Coast time here on VSiN. Wes, we appreciate you waking up with us this morning in studio. Always a pleasure to chat. Let's talk some Big Ten, because I know you follow that conference closer than anybody that I know. The championship game later today is seeing some betting influence that we've seen throughout this morning. Wisconsin now a 3.5-point dog, total 148. What's your thought process, side or total, Illini the favorite against the Badgers?
Yeah, I felt Wisconsin was going to make a run in this tournament, despite the fact that they were 3-8 in February and March, just had a terrible month. But they've shot the ball well for a couple days, but I don't think that this is the best matchup for them. I don't know if you watched Nebraska-Illinois yesterday in the second semifinal, and Illinois got down double digits and were down double digits at the half, and then they made that run go away just like that and defended really well in the second half. And that's the concern for Illinois. When you look at them profile-wise, it's like, can they really guard? You know they can score.
Yep.
There are very few offenses, if any, that are better than Illinois. That's why they're one of the top five in the country. But, yeah, I think this could be – you could get a tired team in Wisconsin because they had to play that extra day. And oftentimes that's baked into the number and it's a little bit overhyped. But I wonder, Wisconsin, they had to really grit it out against Purdue yesterday in overtime. So, you know, you beat the Big Ten champion that beat you twice in the regular season. So I'm sure they're going to try. They want to obviously win a Big Ten championship here in the conference tournament. But man, I wonder if Wisconsin kind of wears down in the second half, and I think that you could see that today. So lean to Illinois here. I agree with the market.
Let's stay in the Big Ten for a second. Ohio State, Jake Diebler, the interim coach, they promoted him to the full-time coach today, or allegedly that's what they're going to do. Did that surprise you that they didn't go out and expand the search?
A little bit, but as time went on, Michael, I think – he did such a great job, and the fact that maybe they didn't get the candidate that they wanted, I maintain that Ohio State wanted to get Greg McDermott, who currently is the coach of Creighton. He had a crack at the job, actually didn't take the job last time before it ended up going to Chris Holtman. So I felt McDermott was the guy. And then you look at some of the other candidates. There was rumors of Lamont Paris at South Carolina. Lamont Paris, of course, got an extension down there. And I don't know if an offer was made. That's the rumor out there, that an offer was made, and it was kind of a little bit of a low ball offer. Lamont Paris, of course, is from the state of Ohio, coached in the Big Ten with Bo Ryan at Wisconsin for many years, so certainly had the roots. But when you looked at some of the other candidates, there, like Dusty May has been bannered about. I think Dusty May maybe to Louisville, if he leaves Florida Atlantic, could be one to watch. But you were hearing Dusty May, you were hearing, you know, Josh Schertz at Indiana State, you were hearing some of those guys. But I think ultimately they decided to go ahead with Diebler. They're going to have a new AD at Ohio State starting in July.
All right, well, we're hanging out with Wes Reynolds here on the Lombardi Line, talking all things college hoops right now. And we'll get to the tournament here in just a sec, but I do want to ask you about the SEC tournament championship game, Florida and Auburn. This one tips off 1 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock West Coast time. Right now, the Tigers, 5.5-point favorites, total 158.5. And the Gators have been hot rolling into this SEC tournament. Can they keep it going against Auburn?
I think they can. And look, it is a rematch. Florida handled them pretty easily earlier in the season down there in Gainesville. They only had the one meeting. But Todd Golden, Bruce Pearl, kind of one of his mentors. So, you know, teacher versus student here, if you want to say that. But 5.5, we're pretty much seeing right now. I like Florida here. Total is actually getting smashed to the over right now. We're seeing as high as 159.5. And that makes kind of some sense, even though you think, okay, maybe some tired legs, you know, playing third day in a row for both of these teams. However, both of these teams know they're going to the NCAA tournament. This isn't like what we're seeing with Brown, or like Brown and Yale in the Ivy, which is going to tip off at the top of the hour, Duquesne VCU in the A-10, where it's like, okay, the winner goes and the loser goes home. Both these teams are going to the tournament. So I maintain that there's it takes a lot more energy to play defense, certainly, than it does for offense. So you may see these two teams run and gun, and you've certainly seen it, especially from the Florida side, game in the 90s yesterday with Texas A&M. So I don't necessarily disagree with that move.
With all Temple wins today, or UAB, what team do you think is going to end up getting lost in the shuffle that should be in the tournament?
One I will say is Indiana State, who I think belongs in the tournament, but doesn't have the resume to get into the tournament. So I think all these teams, Michael, all these AQs, NC State last night, I think a perfect example in the ACC, Oregon right here in Vegas at the Pac-12. Those teams weren't expected to get bids. And then you have two bids now that are coming out of the American, because Florida Atlantic is going to be an at-large. And you have two bids coming out of the A-10, Dayton already locked into an at-large. So that's bad for a team like Indiana State. And then it's going to be ironic, too, guys, if Rick Pitino and St. John's gets kind of done in for an NCAA tournament bid, not only by his former coach, Kevin Keats, at NC State, his former assistant, but also his son, Richard Pitino, because the New Mexico Lobos came out here to Thomas and Mack in Vegas and won the automatic bid for the Mountain West. And they were a little bit touch and go coming into this week. So you may end up, I didn't think it was possible. I thought five was going to be the limit. You may get six teams now from the Mountain West Conference this year. So potential bad news for St. John's, potential bad news for Virginia, but Virginia's got nobody to blame but itself. Virginia absolutely melted down on Friday. And look, credit to NC State, all the credit in the world to win five games in 5 days. Never been done before. So, and that helped Kevin Keats, too, because he gets that automatic 2-year extension. Mm-hmm. Like, he was going to be out. They were going to probably move on and make a change down there in Raleigh. But with Virginia melting down and then them taking it to North Carolina last night, NC State and Kevin Keats looking pretty good.
Yeah, don't turn your back on the Wolfpack. I mean,
there you go.
Now the country gets to know DJ Burns Jr., which if you haven't seen him play, NC State is must-see TV coming up on Thursday or Friday whenever they play their first round game. Wes, let's talk tournament big picture here. Right now, UConn, the defending national champions, they're expected to be the number one overall seed. They're the number one team on KenPom. Is this going to be a UConn coronation? Are we headed towards a repeat? Or do you think that this week, conference championship week, is indicative of what we're going to see in the tournament? Are we in store for some madness coming up here?
I think a little bit of both, kind of somewhere in the middle. Look, UConn absolutely the number one favorite, deservedly so. So I don't want to say it's not going to be, because it's like you want to go against these guys. They started so poorly against Marquette after that high energy game with St. John's, you know, run and gun basically in the Garden on Friday afternoon. Danny Hurley's yelling to throw one of Pitino's donors and guys that's sitting on the guy in the red jacket, throw him out of the Garden, get security over there. It was hostile. And then you had Saturday. They started out so rough against Marquette, and then eventually they took over. I think Marquette was kind of dead-legged in the second half as well. But I think UConn is the rightful number one seed. Purdue, there's always that question, can they do it in March? I've been a Matt Painter defender and more of a Purdue believer, despite the fact I'm an IU alum. But it's going to be interesting. Houston, though, one of the things that's concerning me about Houston, they're injured. And their depth has gone basically to the injured reserve here. They looked tired yesterday and beat up against Iowa State. And that's not a team you want to play, a very physical Iowa State team, as Iowa State basically ran them out of Kansas City yesterday. But I think you're going to have a little bit of mix here, guys. I don't think you're going to have it like last year where it was all four seeds or above. I think you're going to get one or two chalks through, and then you're going to get one through that you probably don't expect.
Is there one team you got your eye on that could be the sleeper of all? I mean, JVT loves Iowa State. Is there one team you like? I know Iowa State's not a sleeper. They're ranked really well. But is there a sleeper you like?
They're going to be a 3 seed probably, Michael, but they're sitting there at 30-1. Creighton Blue Jays. And I know had an early exit in the Big East tournament in the quarterfinals, but this is a team that was probably one bad call away from getting to the Final Four last year, made it to the Elite Eight, lost in the regional final to San Diego State. Experienced team, coach that was kind of flirted with Ohio State, Greg McDermott. Now they signed him to a big extension. So Creighton Blue Jays experience, got a big guy down low, Kalkbrenner. You got a guards that can make shots. So watch out for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, they were on the Elite Eight doorstep just last year. Might have made the Final Four if not for San Diego State and the way that game ended. Wes will be at the top of the hour with Matt Brown hosting The Handle as they get to some of those live in-game opportunities for the conference championship games that we'll see later on today. But that does it for us here on the Lombardi Line. For Michael Lombardi, for our producer Elliot Bowman, the entire crew behind the glass, we wish you all the best of luck. Make sure you check out The Handle once again, top of the hour here on VSiN. We'll see you guys later.